Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Dosser. It is Thursday, April 16th. We had initially planned on making this episode of the podcast be another run it back podcast on the 2015 Final Four game between Kentucky and Wisconsin. But of course, Jalen Green had to go and announce that he is going straight to the G League. The G League had to make it official that they are launching a new venture for elite high school prospects that is part G League, part NBA Academy, part Skill Development Center, part a whole bunch of different things that we are going to spend plenty of time talking about. But first and foremost, before we do that, let me welcome in my buddy Reegs, the host of the Fundamentally Sound podcast, and send one up to the cross for Rocky, Reegs' dog, who passed away this week. So Reegs, first and foremost, shout out to Rocky, the little Dachshund that kept yapping on every podcast. Gonna miss that guy. How you doing, man? How you holding up? Sorry about your pup.
Appreciate it. Yeah, we're hanging in. We're doing well. As you can tell, I haven't shaved since quarantine, so that's where we are, day 30 of this. You somehow look like you've been keeping up with your grooming, which I'm shocked by. I figured you'd be looking grizzly right now.
No, so I've had to shave the beard. I've done some video hits for NBC Sports and some of their like some draft content, and just like got to keep the content coming. So I've done video hits from my office, so I have to keep the beard looking nice. And like, but my hair is just getting so ridiculously long. Like when I comb it and style it, like I literally have to, like the sides, they just stick out. So I have to put so much product in it and have it gelled straight back. The part's getting out of control. My hair is so long. I literally feel like probably Derek Kellogg is the best way to explain it. With my hair just slicked straight back, so much grease in it. I've never felt more like a mobster in my entire life than I do now anytime that I have to do one of these videos.
I'm so lucky I got a haircut a day before the quarantine. Yeah. So like literally the last possible day. So at least get like, cause it was already gnarly. The fact that I at least got a haircut, I'm like, all right, this should last me. Like I typically go once a month. Now I'm like, I can't wait to get it. I think after going to a bar, the first thing I'm going to do is get a haircut.
The very first thing that I am going to do once this quarantine is lifted is go and get my hair done. I already got it set up. I've been messaging with my girl, Erin Daly. Shout out to you. She's gonna take care of me because I need it done. It's gotten to the point where it's, you know, when you get to that point, there's like, when you get your hair done, you feel great for like those first 3 days. And then after a while, just like, this is good. I'm feeling good about it. And then there's always one moment, whether it's getting out of the shower and you run a comb through your hair and you're like, oh wow, I need to get something done. Or like you're scratching the back of your head and you feel like you can actually grab the hair and grab a fistful of hair. Yep. If you got a fade going or something like that. Like, there's always a moment where you just realize your hair is just like just too long and you have to get it done. And you know what it was for me? It was the day before I was supposed to drive up to Stanford to go do the TV stuff and go in studio for the Atlantic 10 tournament, which was a Wednesday. And that day was the day that Rudy Gobert tested positive for coronavirus. So the day that I realized like, oh shit, I'm a mess. It's too long for me. I got to go get this taken care of. I got to go get a cut was literally the last day that things like that were possible to do. And I never got it done. And my hair has been growing ever since. And it's over a month now. So it's getting bad. I got the neck hair flowing. It's disgusting. I hate looking at myself in the mirror.
I feel bad for our wives. Usually they get to look at just specimens and instead they're looking at filth.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel bad for my wife, but I tell her all the time that she's lucky because she married a trophy husband. So
yeah, I mean, they really lucked out with us.
Yeah, we got to keep it up. Like, that's the problem, man. We're not bringing anything else to the table except for our dazzlingly good looks.
That's it. That and our, like, wit.
Yeah, I am pretty charming. I will say that. All right. So for people that have been living under a rock or maybe just don't care about basketball or if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know by now. Jalen Green, a top three prospect in the class of 2020, arguably the top prospect in the class, announced on Thursday afternoon to pretty much no one's surprise that he is going to be skipping college and doing his one and done year at let me get the exact name of it, because it used to be the G League Select Program, but it seems like they've rebranded it into something that is being called the G League Professional Pathway Program. And before I dive into this and kind of let you have your say, Reeks, let me just kind of set the table for you guys for what it is. He's not entering the G League like the way that you would think that normally he'd be entering the G League. He's not joining a G League team. He's not like joining the Reno Bighorns. He's not joining the Maine Red Claws. What the G League is planning on doing is establishing an academy in Southern California where they put 6 to 8 elite recruits every year in a bunch of really nice apartments, put them somewhere near, like, I think the goal is to try to get the Mamba Academy. I don't know if that's going to work, but there's like a dozen facilities in Southern California that have a really nice weight room, 5 or 6 basketball courts within the facility, places where you can provide education on how to manage your money, how to invest money, how to, you know, handle a checkbook and a bank account and do all of those. Basically teach these kids how to be adults and how to be professionals on and off the floor. So more or less what they're establishing is an NBA academy in the United States in Southern California for what is hopefully 6 to 8 elite recruits. The deal that Jalen Green got, the number that's getting thrown out there is $500,000 with incentives included, which more along goes along the lines with what we've kind of heard, mm-hmm. me and you, Reeks. At least I'm assuming. If you have anything else to add, please cut it when you're done. But so basically what happens is Jalen Green is getting $500,000 to go and train with a G League program where he will be playing exhibition games against other NBA academies, exhibition games against maybe some junior college programs or some NAIA programs, exhibition games against other G League programs. There's going to be NBA coaches involved. There's going to be NBA trainers involved. There's going to be veteran NBA basketball players that are kind of playing on this team and around them every day. So it's basically just a place to put this kid, to get him within the NBA's grips, to get him within the NBA system and the NBA organization, and let him do his one and done year in a place where he can just kind of prepare to be the best basketball player that he can be when he gets drafted. And it is something that has kind of turned into this conversation about the end of college basketball and blah, 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 and all these other things. But before we get into it, just kind of take me through, Reeks, what your first reaction was when you realized that Jalen Green was going to end up going to the G League instead of college. Are you sad we're not going to be able to see him play for Memphis or Auburn? Just kind of talk me through your first reactions.
Yeah, so I'll get into that second question you asked me at the end, because that's going to kind of go into what we talk about more and probably me ranting. I had heard about this actually from a very reliable source Tuesday night. And I said, okay, like it makes sense when he laid it out to me. The base is going to be, the old select program was $125,000 base. They scrapped that when they realized, what I was told, they realized that that just simply wasn't going to be enough money to kind of incentivize people, you know, these guys to skip college or skip overseas and stay at home and do this G League pathway, whatever you want to call it. So they upped it to $300,000 base for Jalen Green. The goal, like you said, is to get 6 to 8 people in. They're not all going to get what Jalen Green's getting, because Jalen Green is that fucking good. And he's worth it, honestly, if you're the G League and the people that are associated within the G League, to get a name, to get somebody who can compete at this high level, who might be the number one overall pick a year from now. If not, he's almost a lock, barring something drastic happening, being a top 5 pick a year from now. So it makes all the sense in the world with this being the way I correlate is, if you start a business, you want to make your first hire the best hire. You want the guy that's going to be with you forever. you want the guy that's going to be, you know, not screwing up everything. That's Jalen Green more than anything else. So I'm not shocked by it at all, because we had heard for the longest time that, yes, he was interested in college, but he was really looking to play professionally, whether it was overseas, whether it was internationally, whether it was whatever. I'm curious, because this is the first time we've seen this. Like, Darius Bazley was going to do something along these lines last year, bailed at the last second to do the New Balance internship. This is, it's different. It's interesting. It's also a no-brainer. I think that's the one thing. It's an absolute no-brainer. If you're Jalen Green, if you're any top recruit, if you can make $400,000, let's say, to $600,000, somewhere in that range, even down to $250,000, $250,000, and you get NBA level training, it sounds like Sam Mitchell's going to be kind of like their coach. So a former NBA player, former NBA coach, and everything like that. You're living in Southern California in nice apartments. And they get a scholarship. Like, they're still getting their scholarship paid for. So everyone who is probably old and likes to think that people are choosing colleges because of education, and that college degrees still really matter in the everyday world, as long as, you know, you're not talking about doctors and scientists and things like that, they still get a scholarship. They still get that free education. So it's a no-brainer. Now, you know, we'll get into I would love to see Jalen Green in college basketball, because, Rob, I don't know if you're ready for this hot take. I got a steaming hot take for you. I like watching the best talent play college basketball.
Wow. I cannot believe you went there.
I know. People are shocked that I say that, when I'm like, yeah, this is like, I'm in favor. Like, I'm not in favor of the one and done rule, because I think you should have your ability to go anywhere. Like, you should be able to go to the NBA if they want you. I like it because we get the best talent in college basketball for 1 year, 99% of the time. Yes, I enjoy that, because guess what? We got Zion, we got Anthony Davis, we got John Wall, we got fill in the blank. We wouldn't be getting those guys. And spare me I like guys that are juniors and seniors, and that's how college basketball should be. No, it's, sorry, I want to see the best players. I don't need this bullshit that, you know, we're going to cheer for laundry regardless. Like, I've used the example, you could put five commenters from Louisville in blue and white, and Rupp Arena is going to be packed. It's because we cheer for laundry. Like, that's what we do. Spare me the bullshit of this whole, like, college matters and you're there to see people grow and it's not an NBA factory. It's always been an NBA factory, because 95% of the NBA comes from college basketball. It's always been that way. So spare me that. Like, it's an end to the means for some guys who are one and done because they have to go there. Spare me the bullshit that you care about these guys staying for 3-4 years. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's... When you have the guys, the only thing that I would say is that when you have the guys that stay for 3 or 4 years, I think that part of becoming a diehard fan and really investing in a team is being able to connect with players that you've kind of watched grow and watched develop. Like, it's awesome to watch like Jalen Green play, right? Don't get me wrong, I would love to see him play college basketball, but there's a difference between watching someone like, let's say, Tyshawn Alexander, and seeing him go from a guy that was just okay as a freshman to pretty good as a sophomore to really, really good as a junior to a potential first-team All-American as a senior, and then all of a sudden that fan base has a connection with him that they're never going to break. Like, anytime Tyshawn Alexander goes back to Omaha, he can buy, like, he's never going to pay for a beer kind of a deal. Like, I think that Kentucky fans are kind of starving for being able to watch guys develop and grow, get to know them personally, and then see them come back instead of just having to reintroduce themselves to a whole new set of players.
I think it's different this day and age, because you can follow these guys on social media, and like, high school games and AAU games are broadcast everywhere now these days. So you can watch them
Yeah, but no one cares about
it. But I'm saying, I feel like more than ever, recruiting, especially if you're a fan of like Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas, those type of schools, you're watching these kids from when they're 14 till when they get there. And I get for maybe like Creighton's of the world and the guys that are recruiting, not the true one and dones. That's where I could
people,
see
it, the size difference. Of people that are watching basketball games out, like even below the college level, is just, it's so minuscule. Like there's no people pay attention. Like there's a subsection of a fan base that pay attention to the recruits that are coming up because they are absolute maniacs and absolute diehards and live on the internet. The majority of fans probably know who these guys are, like the first time that they watch them play a game on ESPN. And that's one of the problems that you face with college basketball. Just generally speaking, is that no one knows who the All-Americans are after the season because all the All-Americans end up going pro. And part of the reason why 15, 20 years ago, when the one and done was a thing, is that we saw like years where J.J. Redick and Adam Morrison were the two best players in college basketball. And everyone knew who they were because J.J. Redick had been a great player as a junior and came back. And then Adam Morrison turned into this phenomenon as a junior. And there was this huge, big story and they captivated the nation's attention, blah, 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 blah. I think we would have seen the same thing kind of with a guy like Cassius Winston this year if the story hadn't been everything that he was dealing with. And I just think that the connection you get as a fan with these players is something that matters, which is why I've always said it's more important for college basketball overall to try to focus on getting those marginal players to come back than it is to worry about whether or not you're going to get the next Jalen Green or the next Zion Williamson coming in. Because there's always going to – like the storylines are always going to show up. The stars are always going to show up. There's always going to be a great freshman. But having guys that those fan bases can really connect with, I think matters just as much, possibly even more than getting these guys coming in. I also think it's important to note that fundamentally do not believe that this academy, the professional pathway program is going to be a death blow for college basketball overall. Because the important thing to remember, and this is from conversations that I've had with multiple people, is that we're looking at like 6 to 8 guys that are coming in, right? This is not going to be like 50 plus players that are entering this. Like the NBA, the goal of all of this is Adam Silver wants the NBA to control youth basketball. He mm-hmm. wants the NBA to invest in the lower levels of the sport so that they can kind of control how these guys develop, right? They want to be to be influencing players when they're 15, 16, 17 years old to try to, part of it is to try to get some of the middlemen away. Part of it is to try to eliminate some of the bad influences that show up when you have this black market that's created by amateurism and by the NCAA. And part of it is simply just because I think Adam Silver realizes that someone like Jalen Green, who has 900,000 followers on Instagram, or someone like Zion Williamson or LaMelo Ball, like these guys have name cachet when they are that young, and kind of tapping into that for the NBA might be good business. Now, on the other hand, I don't necessarily know if it is. Like, so here's the thing you got to remember. All right. You're renting out the Mamba Academy. Like, how much is that? You're renting out a place like the Mamba Academy. I think that's probably the fair way to phrase it, to make sure I don't put any absolutes on that. How much is that going to cost you, right? You have to pay Sam Mitchell to come in and be the coach. You have to pay the trainers to come in. You're paying Jalen Green $500,000. Now, I was told that the 6 to 8 other guys that they're getting are not going to be getting Jalen Green money. Like, you have to kind of overpay him because of his name, overpay him because you need that first guy to kind of get in the door. But like Isaiah Todd, from my understanding, is not going to be getting $500,000 or whatever it ends up being. He's not going to be getting that same level of money. But again, you still have to pay all of those guys. So you're
because he's getting at least $250,000. Like that's the minimum that somebody like Isaiah Todd would get.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't know if that's what it's going to be for Isaiah Todd. I haven't had unless you've heard a specific number. I heard it's going to be
around there. Give or take. I'm not saying it's definitely 250, but it's around 250.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's half of 500,000. That makes it a little less desirable to go there. But regardless, the point is the NBA is going to be paying for that. We're now talking about multiple millions of dollars when it comes to everything that you have to pay for the apartments that these kids are going to be staying in, right? You have to pay for the people that are going to be making them their food. You have to pay for the guy that's going to show up to clean the gym. you have to pay for these guys to develop. And we're talking about multiple millions of dollars. And where does the NBA get their money back on that, right? Like, is the NBA, how are they profiting off of like a guy like Jalen Green having 900,000 Instagram followers while he's going out and playing nothing but exhibition games and working out and training, right? Like, where does their money come back? Where does that investment come back? What is their ROI, right? And the other part of it is when Jalen Green is going here, yes, it's going to be great for him to kind of develop and work out, but he's going to be doing nothing but playing meaningless exhibition games, right? Part of the value of going to college is that every night you're playing on national television, you're competing against more or less the highest level of the sport at that age, and you're doing so in front of huge crowds with all this pressure and all this expectation. You're doing so at a young age, and you kind of learn how to play that way. You learn how to execute with that pressure and that expectation, and you learn how to play when you can't hear what's going on the court because everyone is yelling so loud. And you have to learn how to win. That's another part of it too. Like, you're competing at Jalen Green in high school. I don't know what his record was as a senior. I'm assuming he won a lot of games, and a lot of those games were won pretty easily. That's probably fair.
Probably. He also won 2 gold medals though. Like, he's played in different events.
Yeah, but the gold medals at the youth level, like we all watch it. So I guess what my larger point is that if he's going and playing nothing but exhibition games, like, how much are you really learning? Like, that's what we knock AAU for, right? The whole problem that people have with AAU is that all these kids are doing is playing games. They're worrying about individual development. They're not learning how to impact winning from a team perspective in games that actually matter. Like, that's kind of what this looks like it's going to end up being.
But on the flip side, look at to the two guys that have essentially done something similar to this. Mitchell Robinson and Darius Bazley. They've both been successful in the NBA. Like, this hasn't hindered them, except for maybe where Mitchell Robinson got drafted. But, like, yeah, Robinson's one of the better young bigs out there, if he can just stop fouling, and I say that as a Knicks fan. And, like, Darius was getting minutes. It's not like so far the track record, granted it's a very, very small sample size of two guys who have sat out and gone through, whether it's a New Balance internship or Mitchell Robinson just working out, it seems to not hurt them on the court.
Well, no, it doesn't. But here's the thing. Who paid for Mitchell Robinson's development and training?
Right, right.
Where did that money and that investment come from?
Well, you could argue that the ROI will come when Jalen Green gets drafted top 3 overall and his jersey sales go through the roof and they're able to market him on TV a little bit more. I'm just saying, because of this Instagram following, he's now the story that he's the kid who skipped college. I do believe that going to college helps you more from that marketability standpoint. We also haven't seen someone like Jalen Green skip college and do this. Like, he's by far the biggest name. LaMelo Ball is a whole different animal. Jalen Green is, I think, by far the biggest name to go this path. So we don't really have a good precedent for this. I think the ROI can be there, assuming we don't know what their plan is. They might show these games on ESPN2 when they have the
10-12. But who's going to watch? You know, like, how many people watch LaMelo Ball? Like, LaMelo Ball has a bigger following than Jalen Green does. Like, LaMelo Ball, when it comes to,
those games run at 2 a.m.
Yeah, but they still didn't really get all that much of a bump. But they didn't get the Australian Basketball League didn't get like a huge bump in Instagram or Twitter followers because LaMelo Ball showed up there. Like, it's not. I guess what my point is that, generally speaking, right, people are not invested in the actual player himself. Like, yes, we want to see the highlights. Like, yes, we're interested to see how good he ends up being. Yes, we're interested to see how this plays out. But where fans and where the money is generated is where you already have the infrastructure built to be able to harvest revenue from these kind of like social platforms and game platforms. And what that is the NBA. What that is Major League Baseball. Like, how many people went and watched Mike Trout play when he was playing at Triple A? Nobody did. Like, the thing is,
MLB's
like, people
are the worst at marketing their own players.
Yes. And like, this is a fun story or an interesting story and a fun announcement, and it's going to get headlines at the time, but it's not like all of a sudden, are you telling me you're going to tune in and you're going to watch Jalen Green play in 12 exhibitions against G League teams?
I can tell you
I have no.
I can tell you I'm 100% tuning in the first one, and I'm going to see what happens. I don't know about all 12, but that's one game,
and that's you who's really invested. How many casual fans are going to go out and watch this? People don't care about it. The thing that's unique about college athletics in this country is it's the only, like, honestly, think about this for a second while I say it, but because I'm curious if you could think of another one. But where in sports, anywhere else in the world, do people care about something that is not the absolute highest level? Right,
Texas high school football.
Okay, Texas. There,
that's what I'm saying, it's those two things.
Yes, yeah, like Indiana high school basketball, yeah. Right? Like it's very small pockets of things that are very, very local. I guess you can maybe make the argument about like club football in England, but for the most part, you don't get this kind of this national following of anything that is not the highest level of a sport. So it sounds like I'm being negative on this. And look, I'm not trying to knock Jalen Green for his decision. Like, I think that I've gotten past the idea of like where I'm going to criticize someone for what they're doing. As long as they're informed on what it is and they think this is the right decision for them, like, go for it. I'm happy for you. Go get your, like, if he wants to get paid, go get paid. If they think this is the best option for you to go and work out for a year in the G League, like, go do it. Like, I'm happy for you. If this is what makes Jalen Green happy, and he, and it sounds by all accounts that he did the research and he got the information and he did all of his due diligence, like, good for him. Like, honestly, I'm saying that. And I'm not just sitting here saying, like, I hope I'm not coming off as bitter because the kid's not going to play college basketball. Like, whatever. You know, like, RJ Hampton was supposed to go to Kansas, went to go play overseas, and Kansas turns out to be the best team in college basketball last season. Like, college basketball would be just fine. People care about laundry. What I'm trying to say is I don't understand how this makes sense from the NBA's perspective, right? Like, the NBA, the owners of those teams are going to be investing in player development in a space where in the past they did not have to spend that money. And I don't get why it's something that it's not like we see all of these guys coming in and being these major busts. Like, how many one and dones are just complete whiffs, complete busts, guys that we thought were sure things that never ended up making it. Like, it doesn't feel like it's all that often that it happens. Right. And it doesn't feel like the issue is specifically because they went to college. I think the issue has a lot more to do with what's going around that individual in that specific situation than it is the fact that they got to go do a one and done year in college. So it felt like there were more busts when we had people going straight from high school to the NBA. So I just, long story short, I don't understand what the NBA's end game with this is and how it's better for them as a business, better for their bottom line.
I mean, we need to see until it happens. Like, we're guessing. Like, maybe this works because the NBA is the best out of any other sport in the world at marketing their players and marketing stuff. Maybe they have a whole Twitter set up for this where, you know, they can push it more on their Twitter. They're the best with social media. That's why NBA highlights are everywhere. So I'm curious to see until we actually see what happens, because we don't have a precedent for this, because we've never seen somebody go this G League route versus some of the other stuff. I do have a problem.
Actually, real quick, that's actually a really good point, like how good the NBA is on social. It's something that they might be able to. Okay, so that's a good point. That's a fair point.
And that's what I say. He might be on like the NBA main social media account more than any other player besides like Zion and LeBron and Giannis next year. Like, we just don't know. And that could be part of the ROI, where they're making money on just the video highlights, and B, again, that's the name that stays fresh even though he's not playing college. It's almost like the Instagram of the but in a one specific league of like, oh, did you see that sick Jalen Green dunk?
Here, this would be my counterpoint. Is that more beneficial to invest all of this money in trying to develop Jalen Green within your own system and be like profiting off of whatever you can get off of social? Like, are they going to be able to make their money back doing that in games where it doesn't, like, how many times are we going to watch a clip of Jalen Green, like training? Like, how many times are we going to, are people really going to care about watching Jalen Green scrimmage against G League teams, right? Versus letting him go to like Memphis or Auburn, where he's going to be playing on national TV every night. Like, is it going to be more valuable to get what you get out of those clips that you're referring to while he's just working out? or to not spend the however many millions of dollars that you have to spend to be able to develop him, let him go to Memphis or Auburn, play on ESPN every single night, develop and let him market himself because of how damn good he is, and then have him go number one in the draft that way. Like, which way to you? Like, I just don't think that they're going to make the money back for the investment.
But it's also pro in the way that they get to control it themselves. They don't have to worry about Memphis or Auburn or NCAA or ESPN handling this marketability. The NBA gets to handle it all themselves. And I think that's a major pro when you're looking at just that league standpoint.
So they'll be able to handle it, but will it be at the same level?
I don't know. We'll be able to have this conversation, you know, ideally a year from now, when we can actually see what happens with it. But
to put a bow on what my argument is, I think that this is a great deal for Jalen Green. And one that I think that he's if I was advising him, I would tell him to take it. What I don't understand is why it's a great deal for the NBA.
Who knows? Well, I think we won't know the answer to that until we see this process go through, maybe more than once. This might be a 5-year, 5 years from now when we are still devilishly handsome and young and talking about this on a podcast. And that might be when we see it, honestly. It might not be a 1-year plan where the NBA might say, hey, we might deal with this sucking and losses for 2 years, or 3 years, but come year 4 and 5, we're good now. And I don't know. It's all guessing at this point from that standpoint.
Yeah. So one other thing that I did want to mention, just from kind of having conversations about this, is I was kind of operating under the assumption that there is a 100% chance that that the NBA age limit goes away and the one and done rule goes away. And I don't know, after talking with people, like, I'm kind of at like, you know what, maybe it's closer to like a 75 or 80% chance that it goes that way. And the reason I say it is, this is how it was phrased to me by one person, is that Adam Silver is the one that wants to change it, right? But it doesn't necessarily benefit either the owners or the actual NBA Player Association. So the way that the process works is to get this put into the CBA, the NBA Players Association and the owners themselves have to make the agreement that the age limit goes away. Well, it doesn't benefit the owners because all of a sudden they have more risk in the players that they are drafting, right? They have to spend an extra year of money investing in developing these guys. So instead of letting the colleges develop these players in their age 18 season, now NBA owners are developing these guys in their age 18 season. So that's quite literally money out of the owner's pockets that they weren't spending before. And instead of when you draft a guy, like you have control over his contract for 9 years if you want it, because you get the 4-year rookie deal if it's a first round pick, and then you get the first chance of giving him the 5-year extension. So you basically have 9 years of control over a player. And this means that instead of drafting a 19-year-old, that's 1 year closer to be able to being able to contribute and then getting his year 28 season, his age 28 season on the back end. Now you have one extra year of development that you have to give, and then you lose control over the player at age 27. So not only are you spending more money to develop this player before you actually get him impacting your roster, but on the back end, you get one less year of this player in his prime at whatever deal that you're paying him at, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's a net negative for the owners to get rid of there's a reason that they have this in the first place. So when Adam Silver said, I want to get rid of the one and done rule because I want the NBA to control youth basketball in America at every level that we possibly can, the owners were basically like, look, we can get on board with this, but the deal that we need to make and the concession that we need to get is that the Players Association has to have a mandatory deal where everybody invited to the combine has to go to the combine, and you have to go through the combine's medical testing so that everybody and every team has access to the same information. So Adam Silver was like, yeah, cool. I get this done. It's a concession. So he goes to the NBA's Player Association and he's like, look, we can get rid of this one and done rule, but you have to concede to allowing every team to have access to all of the medical testing that you do at the combine. And the NBA Players Association looked at him and it was basically like, fuck you, we're not conceding anything. One, this was not our idea. So don't come to us with concessions when it's not our idea. It's something that you guys want to do. Because two, this doesn't benefit the Players Association either. You know why? The guys that are in the Players Association are all current NBA players. They are current employees of the NBA. And as soon as the one and done, as soon as the one and done rule goes away, and all of a sudden you have two full draft classes going into the NBA, what that means is that twice the number of NBA caliber players that need to be on a roster somewhere are entering the league at the same time, which means there's going to be what, like 20, 30, 40 guys that currently have a job in the NBA that are suddenly going to be out of a job. Yep. The NBA players and the NBPA, they realize this. Those guys don't want to be out of a job. They want their money. They want to keep getting paid. So it does not benefit them to have this rule go through either, because it means that more of them are going to be losing their jobs quicker. So they said, they basically said, Adam Silver, like, fuck you. We're not conceding anything. So Adam Silver's like, has to go back to the owners. And he's like, well, you guys, you know, you have to give up to get rid of this one and done rule. You have to change this, that, and third. And the NBA Players Association isn't conceding anything. And the owners kind of looked at him and like, well, you know what? Fuck you. If they're not conceding anything, we're not conceding anything, because we don't want this in the first place. So it kind of feels like we're at a point where Adam Silver wants something to happen, and he's trying to get the owners and the NBA Players Association on board. And I feel like this is the kind of thing that'll end up getting settled eventually as negotiations happen. But as we stand, like, it's basically like Adam Silver wants to get something done where all the, it doesn't benefit the NBA's Players Association and the current NBA players, and it doesn't actually benefit the owners all that much either.
Can I get into a rant, a problem that I have had with this announcement and the talk of one and done in general?
Well, yeah. Does it have to do with how this impacts college basketball overall?
Just in general, about this all. There's too many I feel like Dwight in The Office, where he's like, there's too many people in the world. There's too many dumb people on the internet. That's my my first problem. Listen, I'm not a smart person. I'm smart enough out, when it comes Riggs, to basketball.
Let it out, Riggs. Let it out. I've been waiting for this.
It's day 30 of quarantine. You might see a whole new side of me. Listen, I really like Kevin Sweeney. I got into it with him today. Go follow Kevin. He's really good at what he does. He's a young guy, CBB underscore Central. And he used the phrasing, the non-LaMelo ball history of Americans playing pro ball instead of college isn't good. And few have played as high as the levels to G League. RJ Hampton averaged 9 points per game in the NBL on a team with Americans like Scottie Hobson and Brandon Ashley. That kind of got me, and I responded going, well, can you define what isn't good means? Because they're millionaires playing in the NBA. Like, they've been like draft stock. Like, they've been fine. And he's like, well, they haven't really. He's like, well, I choose world-class facilities, chartering everywhere, winning in front of fans who care, and being the big man on campus over one extra year of relative earnings. Here's the thing. You can do this with any player at any goddamn team at any level. All right. So you can say, did Brian Antoine make a mistake going to Villanova? Did Javon Quinterly make a mistake going to Villanova? Did E.J. Montgomery make a mistake going to Kentucky? Did Scalabissiere make a mistake going to Kentucky? Did Cliff Alexander make a mistake going to Kansas? This happens in college every year. This happens with guys where you select to play. There are pros and cons, and there are risks involved, whether you play in college, whether you play internationally, whether you do this G League thing. Stop. My problem is just stop assuming that college is always the right answer, because it's not. College degrees, A, are irrelevant unless you're a doctor, scientist, certain things like that where you need a degree. But this day and age, college degrees have lost, you know, that's lost its luster, that free scholarship. Second of all, again, how many college players going to college, five stars going to college, have we seen, quote, fail at the collegiate level? Would they have been better off going to international or sitting out for a year? Maybe. So that's my problem with this is, and listen, nobody loves college basketball more than me. I my job is college basketball. I live on college basketball. You're a moron if you just sit there and assume college basketball is the only answer for everything. And I agree. Like, it's not going to be ruined. College basketball will not be ruined because of this. But college basketball will get hurt, because we are still losing the top talent. Yes, we've lived in a world without the one and done. Me and you grew up in that world. It was fine. You know what else we didn't have in that world? More options for more players to leave early or not go to college. There are more options than ever for players to leave early, for players to play, and more money for them to make, whether it's overseas, whether it's the two-way contract, whether it's the NBA. We also haven't lived in that world combined with the lack of a one and done or more players skipping college. So yes, while I agree, we will always cheer for Laundry. We will always have Rupp Arena and the Pavilion and Dean Dome and Fog Allen, fill in the blank. We will always have those places. There will always hopefully be students on campus. But the fact is, the more fans are going to be like, why am I going to watch this shit product when there are better players playing on my TV at the same damn time? That's where I don't think that college basketball is going to be ruined, but the lack of talent is going to happen. And that is something worth watching and worth talking about.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that a lot of this depends on what ends up happening kind of with like this G League Academy. Like from my understanding is that more than trying to like kill college basketball, although it does seem like Adam Silver really does kind of have it out for the NCAA.
Maybe.
And he's trying to I don't drive blame him though. Their heart.
Yeah. Like if he can't control it, I don't blame him. He has his own. Would you help another business that's not directly competing with you, but in a way also competing with you? No.
No, but like I think the big thing is the issue, at least to me, is the shady characters that show up around these guys because of the influence of amateurism on the conversation. Like there's always got to be middlemen. There's always got to be a guy. There's always like, because basketball players are so easily identifiable as future millionaires at such a young age, there are always going to be guys that are like hangers on that are trying to mooch off of them, get some money off of them, get in at a young age so that they can be there when the money hits, kind of a deal. It's always going to happen with basketball players. And it only gets the issue only becomes broadened because of this whole amateurism deal. Like if you were a 14-year-old basketball player and you can go out and hire an agent and just kind of say like, okay, I'm going to let you deal with everything for me. Like if you want to talk to me, go through my agent. He's going to deal with all of it. He's going to deal with the money. Like it would make things a little bit like maybe more difficult for coaches that are recruiting players, but it would certainly make things easier for those players themselves. And I feel like this is kind of a shot at that, especially for the elite level talent, but for college basketball as a whole, this kind of depends like the impact that this G League pathway program has is all going to depend on like what they want to do with it. Right. So if they decide that, so they're basically building like a Southern California team that will have like 6 to 8 of the players on the team are going to be high school freshmen. I don't want to mention other than Todd and Jalen Green. Like, I don't want to mention the other names that are kind of being rumored out there. Cause I don't think it's right to get them involved without it until they announce it. But I do think that, so the level of player that's coming into these programs, like the rest of the guys on this team are not necessarily going to be the level of Jalen Green. I think that what they are kind of looking for here is to keep players from going to that Australia Next Stars program. Like, I think they're going to be selective in who they invite in. And I think that it's going to be like my guess, if I had to gun to head, my guess would be that they're going to get like 4 to 5 top 15 players a year and fill it out with another like 3 to 4 guys in that like 35 to 40 range. And if we're talking about losing 8 of the top 50 players, like that's not all that much more than we currently lose to Australia, to working out themselves, guys that like an Anthony Simons or someone like a Josh Hall that went to prep school and are just going to go declare for the NBA draft, like a Kenyon Martin Jr. kind of a deal, right? So it's not like we're losing all that much more talent, all that many more players. The goal of this, it seems to me, is not necessarily to kill college basketball, but to provide the players that are leaving to go to Australia, to go overseas, an opportunity to play in the United States. Now, the plan right now is to only have one team, but what could end up happening if this ends up being successful is that they try to do with this G League pathway program something similar to what Nike did with the EYBL. In a sense where they try to build, like maybe they build 6 teams, maybe they build 8 teams, maybe they start bringing in, get a big enough facility where they have a dorm and they start bringing in like 60 to 80 players every single year. And they end up building a 12 team league or something along those lines where they actually play for something and it's competitive and they have NBA coaches coming in and G League coaches coming in that can help develop these guys and teach them and try to build their own little ecosystem there. And that, if that happens, then that might be something that the college basketball needs to worry about. But losing 60, like, think about it like this, right? James Wiseman played 3 games this year. RJ Hampton did not show up on campus this year. Melo Ball did not show up on campus this year. Terry Armstrong did not show up on campus this year. Cole Anthony played for someone that was irrelevant. Isaiah Stewart played for someone irrelevant. Jaden McDaniels played for someone irrelevant. Anthony Edwards played for someone irrelevant. That is 8. So that's 7 guys that were top 10 to 15 players and 8 in total that were top 50-ish, top 75, four or five star guys, right? And college basketball, yeah, maybe we didn't get the same kind of headlines and clickbait that you got with Zion Williamson and Trae Young, but college basketball is still pretty damn good.
No, it was fun. It was not good. We did not watch good basketball this last year. We watched a lot of fun basketball, but I will draw a line in the sand that was not good basketball. Basketball was not good. College basketball was fun.
I would make the argument that by February there was actually good basketball being played. And look, what you're referring to, and this is for a different topic or a different podcast at a different time. Yeah. But I would make the argument that what you're referring to has a lot more to do with the fact that we keep losing all of these upperclassmen to the professional ranks.
Well, that goes back to what I said originally.
Everybody is transferring, and like it's so much. There's not enough continuity, that November basketball is not a total train wreck. I would make the argument that has more to do with what you're referring to, and I'm not disagreeing with you're 100% correct in what you're saying. My argument would be that has a lot to do with things that are not. James Wiseman not being on campus, Anthony Edwards playing for Georgia, Washington being terrible, and Cole Anthony being on the team that went 10-16.
It also goes to what I brought up originally, where, yes, we've lived in a world with the one and done, but we've also never lived in a world where there are more options than ever for people to leave early. It doesn't have to just be these guys that are coming in as freshmen. There are more options to get paid and get more money than there were in the 90s. And when this whole thing was, before this previous life, that's why, yes, I don't think that college basketball is going to be ruined, at least not short term. This might be a long term play. Like you said, if this blows up and gets bigger, and let's say Jalen Green and Isaiah Todd blow up during this thing, have an awesome time. All they do is talk about it. It blows up social media. The draft stock doesn't get hurt. There's nothing but a success. Now, next year, 4 top 10 players decide to go. Same thing. Year after that, 6 top 10 players decide to go. That's where I think it's a snowball effect that we won't see for a little bit if it is a success. And I'm putting that caveat in there. So if it's a failure, then again, they're back to step one in terms of, is this the death of college basketball? Which is going to take a lot more to kill college basketball than this. This was always, to me, the bigger concern if you're college basketball than going overseas. Like every time that an RJ Hampton decided, there was always an article. Well, here comes the newest trend for top high school athletes. The biggest trend or the biggest concern was always, can these players stay home in America and get paid the same amount of money and do this? And this is where I think, why I think this is a bigger concern than anything with overseas and any of that stuff.
Yeah, and the one thing that I agree with everything you just said. The one thing that I'll add is it's also another argument for why we need to get rid of this name, image, and likeness and amateurism rule. Because if you want to keep these guys on campus and give them a reason, not every kid is going to make a decision that is strictly based off of finances and based off of money. But a lot of them are going to make decisions that are based off of finances and based off of money and based off of business, because that's just how people operate. If I got offered a job at another company that was going to double my salary, I'm probably going to take it. If my boss got offered a job that would double his salary at another company, he would probably take it. Like, that's just how life works. If you get offered twice the money somewhere, you're probably going to go take the job where you get paid twice the money. I think that it's important to say that the way that the NCAA can fight back against this is make a financially viable option. Because overall, if Jalen Green was getting paid the same amount of money, right, and his choice was either I'm going to go to the G League for $500,000 and do all of this stuff, or I'm going to go play for Memphis in front of say 18,000 people every single night on national television. I'm going to be playing in a conference that has another national title contender in Houston. I'm going to be playing for Penny Hardaway and Mike Miller in a town where I'm going to be an absolute god. Like, that actually sounds like a pretty good deal. I'm going to be chartering everywhere, flying on private jets. I'm going to be an absolute legend on campus. Every girl is going to love me. I'm going to be a hero everywhere I go. I'm never going to have to pay for ribs when I go down to Beale Street. Like, being a college basketball player, there are a lot of things that are involved that make it a really, really fun experience and really, really cool. And there are a lot of positives to it. The negatives are that you can make a lot of money doing something else. And I think, you know, when it comes, it feels like every time we have one of these conversations, it comes down to you got to get rid of amateurism. And I think that's just kind of how it is. But Riggs, I don't know if you can hear in the background. My kids just got back in the house. They are starting to lose their mind. I got to go make them dinner.
I can't hear because my kid's screaming, waiting for dinner upstairs.
Yeah. So you know what? I'm going to go eat. I'm going to let you go eat again. Sorry about your dog. I see you drinking a beer. I hope you have seven more of them. I'll have a toast. I'll have a toast to your pup tonight.
Yeah. Now you're making me watch the fucking 2015 Wisconsin Kentucky game. This is for you fans. We're doing 2014 Kentucky Wisconsin instead.
We're run it back Monday afternoon. We'll have the run it back podcast again. I promise. But this was just too important. We spent 50 minutes on a podcast talking about it. We haven't spent 50 minutes on a segment in 9 years, and we spent 50 minutes, an entire 50 minute podcast on this. So Riggs, I will talk to you again on Monday afternoon. As always, please rate, review, subscribe to this podcast. Give me 5 stars. Say something nice about me in the comments. Make producer Tess happy. And as soon as you're done doing that, rate, review, subscribe to the Fundamentally Sound podcast. That is Riggs' podcast that he hosts on his own. He saves all of his best content for that one, all of his good takes. So until then, until Monday, until the 2015 Kentucky Final Four game, because that's what we're running back, Riggs. I will talk to you, man. Take care.
Have a good one.